Hey y'all, welcome to Exploring Entanglements, a podcast brought to you by the Center of Women and Gender Equity at Westchester University. My name is Natalia. I'm a second year double major in sociology and Spanish, and my pronouns are she, her, hers. For background context regarding our conversation, I am bilingual, Puerto Rican, and a cisgendered woman.
Hey everyone, I'm Dana. I'm a senior with a major in psychology and a minor in women's and gender studies. I use she or her pronouns, and just for a little context about who I am in these conversations, I'm a bisexual, cis, white woman.
Hey everyone, my name is Sasha Alvarado. I go by she, her pronouns. I am a third year political science major with a minor in Spanish, and just for a little context about me, I am a bilingual, straight Hispanic woman from Guatemala.
We just wanted to give a quick trigger warning because in this podcast, we will be talking about sexual violence and assault. We'll be analyzing and having conversation around the book Sexual Citizens by Jennifer S. Hirsch and Seamus Khan. This book offers a framework that conceptualizes the factors that enable sexual assault, so we'd like the listeners to be aware that we'll be discussing potentially triggering topics throughout the podcast.
Before we get started, we would like to define some terminology that we will be using frequently throughout exploring entanglements. The first is sex. Sex is an umbrella term that encompasses a wide variety of sexual activities. It's a fluid thing and it looks different for everyone. For the purposes of the podcast, we will be defining sex as sexual activity between people or peoples. This includes intimate experiences between consenting parties that may build a connection. This connection can be defined as intimacy.
Our next term we will be using is sexual citizenship. Sexual citizenship is the acknowledgement of one's own right to sexual self-determination, and importantly, it recognizes the equivalent right in others. So sexual citizenship isn't something that you're granted when you're born. It's something that is fostered, and it's something that we've as a society, institutionally and culturally, have supported. So for example, some people don't feel entitled to their own bodies, and some people feel entitled to other bodies. So how do we promote sexual citizenship? We do this by creating conditions that allow people to be sexually self-determined. So this means making them feel secure, capable, and insisting that we all recognize each other's rights.
Another frequently used term that we'll be using throughout exploring entanglements is sexual geographies. And this can be defined as places and spaces where people meet folks that they might be interested in romantically or sexually. A sexual geography on campus could be a dorm room, a class, or any other space where you can get to know people or meet people. Sexual geographies also hold power in a sexual situation. So, for example, in a dorm room, you can usually find a bed, an uncomfortable chair, and a desk. The presence of a bed in the space might suggest that sex is an option, giving the sexual geography power in that particular situation. Another term is sexual projects, and this involves the reasons why anyone might seek a particular sexual interaction or experience. And a sexual project can be considered a range of things like finding your sexual identity, wanting to experience pleasure, interest in gaining a specific experience, and even just trial and error, finding out what you like and don't like.
Another important term we'll be frequently using is consent. The term consent means the affirmative, voluntary agreement to engage in specific sexual activity during sexual encounter. Consent can be revoked at any time.
Another term that's frequently used with consent is coercion. Ultimately, consent is voided when coercion is present. Coercion is unwanted sexual activity that happens when you are pressured, tricked, threatened, or forced in a non-physical way. Coercion can make you think you owe sex to someone.
Another frequently used term that we'll be using throughout exploring entanglements is sexual geographies. And this can be defined as places and spaces where people meet folks that they might be interested in romantically or sexually. A sexual geography on campus could be a dorm room, a class, or any other space where you can get to know people or meet people. Sexual geographies also hold power in a sexual situation. So, for example, in a dorm room, you can usually find a bed, an uncomfortable chair, and a desk. The presence of a bed in the space might suggest that sex is an option, giving the sexual geography power in that particular situation. Another term is sexual projects, and this involves the reasons why anyone might seek a particular sexual interaction or experience. And a sexual project can be considered a range of things like finding your sexual identity, wanting to experience pleasure, interest in gaining a specific experience, and even just trial and error, finding out what you like and don't like.
The correlation between sexual assault and communities of color in college, based off of what I've read from the sexual citizens text, is they mention a story about a woman who went to a PWI, who went to a predominantly white institution, and there wasn't a safe place for her. There wasn't an environment where she felt comfortable. Whenever she went to parties, people always regulated her as, you know, having drugs, as, you know, a black woman who came to the party and, you know, basically who was a dealer, which, you know, was not the case. And she would go to parties for the sake of meeting people, you know, meeting friends, having like a growing to have like a close friend group. And her experiences every time were very difficult. And she found that the more she drank, the more comfortable she felt. And ultimately, this led to her, you know, one day falling unconscious and her, you know, unfortunately, you know, getting sexually assaulted. And there's a correlation there between this, because these are external pressures that made her drink. You know, the reason why she was drinking in the first place wasn't because she wanted to drink alcohol or she had drank alcohol in the past or had experience with alcohol in the past. It was because she felt uncomfortable, you know, in the higher education system that she was in. And this is explicitly written in the text as well. She felt uncomfortable in the institution that she was in the PWI. And she found comfort in the alcohol and it made her feel more welcome. And ultimately, you know, there's a correlation there because of these external pressures, because it's not uncommon that people of color feel uncomfortable or people of color feel excluded from different parties and different experiences in college because of their identities, because of their race, their ethnicity, their nationality, the languages that they speak. And they find, you know, comfort in alcohol and in drugs. And although I personally am not like a heavy drinker, I can definitely attest to the feeling of discomfort in a PWI and the feeling of not being accepted and included in some experiences because of my ethnicity and you know, my nationality and the language that I speak. So I can attest that these pressures are real.
Right. There was another story of a non-binary individual named Lupe, and it's a very similar story where they attended a white institution, it says, and they felt uncomfortable in this small queer community and the larger white community, so they left campus to try and get away from the, quote, shitty white music that was being played at student events. So they left campus to try and find comfort in some sort of outside environment. And they ended up at a bar where they were alone there, and they were offered a drink by someone and they refused it. And then they were offered again, so they took it, because I guess it says that drinks in New York are very pricey and whatnot. So they just accepted the drink because, I mean, who wouldn't, to be honest? And then it turns out that the drink was, or that they had gotten drugged, that it was, something was put in the drink. And then again, ultimately it resulted in them being assaulted. So I definitely think that there is a correlation between individuals feeling comfortable on their campus and feeling accepted and included in their campus environment, where, one sec. But yeah, like if an individual does not feel comfortable in their campus environment, they might seek other environments that are off campus where things might go awry. Unfortunately, it did happen like that in Lupe's case, where the sexual geography that they were in
wasn't great for them in either case, whether it was at the bar that they ended up at or whether they were on campus. They just like didn't have a place for them. So I think that having a safe space and an inclusive space for people of color and other minorities is really important.
I specifically relate to one of these stories because I used to go to Kutztown University, and I ended up transferring my sophomore year to Westchester because of the lack of minority students on Kutztown's campus. And I would often feel like when I would go out to, you know, these white parties, I felt like, well, I don't like this music, first of all, and I don't feel comfortable here, first of all. So, yeah, maybe I would get a little drink to make me feel a little bit more loose and make myself feel like, okay, well, you know, let me just try to have fun or whatever. And I, you know, and sometimes you feel that the alcohol can make you have fun or help you have fun. So I definitely agree that, like, just being a part of a community of color, like a minority student at a predominantly white institute, can, like, make you feel so uncomfortable and places where, you know, where you're really supposed to have fun. And so, like, I think it's important to acknowledge that in a lot of universities, for example, Westchester University, there are different spaces for different communities. Like, for example, on Westchester's campus, we have two different tailgates. And to put it bluntly, one of them is for the white students and the other tailgate is for the minority students. And so I think it's really important to acknowledge that depending on what community you come from, you're going to have different spaces for you to feel safe at. And sometimes because of this, because of your multiple identities, you might, you know, feel like you have to do some things to allow yourself to be comfortable and allow yourself to have fun. And it's really unfortunate that because of our multiple identities and because we don't feel comfortable in other spaces, sometimes it can result in unfortunate experiences.
But yeah, Sasha, honestly, that reminds me of an experience I had. As soon as I got into high school, my mom, like, drilled into my head, like, to never, ever go to any, like, frat parties because of, you know, her background experience knowing other women of color who have gone to these, you know, white spaces and have, you know, been sexually assaulted. And she always drilled into my head, like, never go to any frat parties, don't drink at any frat parties, like, don't take a drink from anyone that you, like, wouldn't trust with your life. And, you know, like, she ingrained it into my head that I still to this day, like, you know, I've gone to, like, a few frat parties, but, like, I haven't really, like, you know, had more than one drink that I brought, like, you know, myself over there. I've never had a drink from a frat party that, like, you know, that was actually, like, providing the liquor. So, you know, that just goes to show that, like, you know, this type of fear that some people of color and some, you know, communities of color have when it comes to these white spaces and this mistrust is something that is, like, extremely valid. And, you know, that's an experience that I had growing up. My mom, like, really warned me about these spaces and really ingrained into me. And I listen to them to this day, and I don't drink at frat parties at all.
Yeah, and I would never consider a frat party to be a safe space. And especially at Westchester, at least I know a lot of the mainstream frats are predominantly white, and that is never really a safe space for people of color. And I think it's honestly so important to be like, if you're going to be drinking and if you're going to be under the influence, it's so important to be around people that you feel comfortable with and people that share the same values as you. It, like, if you feel like you need to leave, they'll leave with you when you need and things like that. And I feel like a majority of frat spaces and things like that and other, like, predominantly white spaces for people of color is just not ideal.
Something really important to think about, because personally I have, you know, gotten to, like, a pretty drunk state at parties, but I always knew that I had a group of friends with me that either one night we would say, okay, well, like, you know, I'm going to make sure you're okay. We're leaving this thing together. And I'm telling you right now, I don't want to leave with anybody else but you. So I think it's really important that, you know, obviously you are careful when you are going to be drinking, but I also think it's important to have like a person, like a designated person or a partner that you're going to be like, okay, we're leaving this thing together. We're leaving it safely. And, you know, we're just going to look out for each other, because if you are going to be drinking, I think number one, just for comfortability, it would be just much better for you and you would probably have more fun if you drink with somebody or a group of people that you feel safe with. And obviously, if you're going into a place where you already don't feel comfortable, you know, it's really important to especially have in those spaces people that you know are going to be there for you and are going to watch out for you, and you'll just have each other's back, because there's so many unfortunate experiences that so many people have had where they haven't been able to rely on somebody or a group to really look out for them. And so I think it's really important that when we are drinking, we drink in spaces where we feel safe and comfortable.
Yeah, and I feel like almost like with we're talking about like having a group of people that we can trust and that have like our best interests in mind. I think maybe like even setting boundaries or expectations for the night before you go out, just like before anyone starts drinking or anything, just be like, hey guys, this is my intention for the night. I want to go out, have fun, and then leave with you guys. Like I don't like just, I guess, setting boundaries and expectations for how you want the night to go, so everybody's on the same page. And like, if for whatever reason, like there, if you say like, I just want to come with you guys and leave with you guys, but then there's somebody who maybe that you meet when you're out that is having a different idea about like what the rest of the night might look like, if they might want to like go home with you or something like that, your friends will know that that was not something that you had intended to do, so that they can kind of step in and be like, hey, like check in, are you okay with this, like how are you feeling about it, type of thing. So that just like everyone's on the same page and everyone kind of has the same idea of what's going to go on for the night.
Yeah, I honestly feel like that brings up a lot of questions, you know, regarding like consent, regarding, you know, how to drink if you choose to drink, how to drink safely, you know, who are the people that you can confide in, you know, what do you consider a safe space, and, you know, how do you go about, like, if you are drinking and you have a friend who's drinking and your friend decides that she wants to go inside, you know, of a room with someone else, you know, or he, you know, how do you navigate, you know, telling your friends that you want to go and you're under the influence, which means that you're not able to give consent. How do you go about like telling your friend, like, hey, you know, I know you want to go into this room with this guy, and you know, right now, you know, you may want to have sex with him or her. So how do you go about navigating that and telling them, like, hey, you're not in the right mind space of having sex right now. You're not in the right mind space to give consent, and you're not able to give consent. And if, you know, the other person which you're engaging in sexual activity with, you know, they're not in the right mindset either to give consent either. So how would you guys go about navigating a situation like that where you have to kind of, you know, be the middleman and tell your friend no?
I feel like almost like what you said about like, hey, I don't think you're in the right mind space for this. I don't think maybe the other person is in the right headspace for this either. Maybe suggesting you get their Snapchat or you get their phone number or something, and then you can kind of set something else up for another time, or like, I guess just kind of being there for your friend and offering maybe other options could be helpful in that situation, just to make sure that like everything's all good, everything is still safe and whatnot. But again, like giving them that option still and kind of putting in their head like, oh, maybe this isn't the best choice. Like, I know you told me, like, if you set the expectation that I want to come with you guys and then leave with you guys, like, kind of bring that back up and be like, okay, this is what you told me earlier, and this is a little different from what's going on right now. Like, maybe do you want to stick to that plan, and then we can figure something else out for another time for you guys or something like that.
I have been in like situations like that where, you know, we have been at a party and one of my friends have been like, oh, well, I'm about to, you know, head out with this guy, and they're clearly drunk. So in that situation, what I did was I looked at him and I was like, yeah, she's drunk. She's not leaving with you at all. And that's it. And so I think that, like, you know, it also does depend on the situation. Like, for example, like Dana said, you can always just be like, look, she's drunk. She's not leaving with you tonight, but you can get her Snapchat. I'll give you that much. And you can text her tomorrow. But, you know, I think it's more just when another person knows that there's a person that is looking out for that person specifically, like in the situation, my friend. So he knows that I'm there with my friend. I'm looking out for her and I'm saying, yeah, she's not leaving with you. They're going to be more like, all right, cool. Like, you know, it's not that serious for me to leave with her anyways. So I feel like once they see that there's somebody that's there with you, that's like, yeah, no, like I'm not letting her leave, then, you know, then they're going to be less pushy and aggressive, because sometimes it does get to that point where you got to be like, okay, well, look, she's not leaving. Like, you have to get away from us now. And so I feel like the best thing that you can do in those situations is just be honest. Like, you just look at the other person and say, they're drunk, they're not leaving with you, and they're coming home with me. And so I think that, like, just being blunt, basically, is just better for me, at least. I think that's what gets people, what gets other people more so like, okay, that's cool. Rather than like, oh, come on, like, you know, she's not that drunk, because, like, you know, they always try to say something like that. So I think just being blunt will just erase all of that, oh, come on, like, she's not that drunk, like, type of small talk. And so I think that's just what I would do.
Yeah, honestly, I would do the same thing. I would put my foot down and I would tell them, you know, right now she's not in the right mindset of, you know, of having sex, of engaging in any type of sexual activity. And ultimately, she's not, you know, she's under the influence, so she cannot give you consent. So anything that happens, okay, will ultimately be, you know, your responsibility, because you're the one trying to engage. You're the one who is engaging in trying to get her to go with you. And I feel like putting your foot down and showing like, yo, like, you're not about to take my friend. You know, if this is somebody that you really want to, you know, have future relations with, then you can talk to her when she's at an appropriate mindset, where she is, you know, not under the influence, where she can give her consent and she can, you know, make a rational decision about like whether or not she wants to engage in anything with you, even if it's conversation. Ultimately, you know, this reminds me of Ram Step Up and how, you know, we have these community guidelines to stick up for each other. And it goes beyond that, because there's some women, you know, who go to these parties alone, who, you know, get themselves into situations sometimes, or are in situations, are put into situations sometimes where they don't have friends or they don't know anyone to, you know, stick up for them and say like, hell no, there's no way you're leaving with, you know, this individual, you know, who's under the influence. There's no way that, you know, I'm going to allow you to put them into, you know, this, you know, situation, this predicament. And ultimately, Ram Step Up, the program, actually, you know, goes over these situationships and these community guidelines that Westchester University tries to stick by, so that we could prevent some of these, you know, sexual assaults and these rapes that happen.
I definitely think, like, with the Ram Step Up, with the bystander intervention, I think it's so important that everybody kind of takes, even if you're not in a group, like, of people, like, say you go out by yourself, or Lupe's story that we had mentioned earlier, where they had left campus on their own and they went out, like, I feel like everybody can share this responsibility of kind of keeping an eye on each other in these situations where, you know, there's there's drugs, there's substances, there's alcohol, there's things like this. I feel like in Lupe's story, where they left campus on their own, they went out to a bar, and they didn't really have anyone with them to kind of step in or intervene. That's where the whole idea of bystander intervention with Ram Step Up comes in, where everyone should kind of accept this responsibility for the other people that are out, where if you see something, you should say something, or if you see somebody that looks uncomfortable or is alone, like, I know I would keep an eye on anyone if I see anything. I'm always just a little suspicious and always just want to know what's going on and make sure everyone that is safe and stuff. So I feel like with the community guidelines of Ram Step Up, it's kind of, we've made it into a shared responsibility for the safety of everyone around.
So just like Dana is saying, we all need to do our own part in helping each other out and really just preventing any experience of sexual assault from happening. And so I just want to end this with a reminder about some of the resources that we offer on Westchester's campus. In case you know anybody that has experienced harm or you yourself have experienced harm, you are not alone. We do have support spaces here on campus. So you can visit wcupa.edu/sexualmisconduct. You can also visit the Counseling Center that is still open for students virtually. So you can visit their site or call to set up an appointment. And the Center for Women and Gender Equity does offer non-confidential survivor support. If you are listening from another university or city, you can call the National Sexual Assault Hotline at 1-800-656-4673, and that is available 24 hours a day. So please do not feel like you are alone in any of these situations. We are always here to help as a center, as a friend, and we offer various support spaces on campus. So just reach out and know that somebody will be there to support you through this. All right.